Chapter 3, Professional Liability. Introduction. This chapter discusses the legal and practical aspects of the professional liability that attaches to actuarial practice. The topic is offered in these parts: overview, increase in litigations, legal aspects of liability, incorrect estimates, avoiding litigations, actuary and fiduciary duties, amicus curiae briefs of the Academy, relevant court decisions. Overview. Historical. Beginning with the equity funding litigation in the 1970s, actuaries have increasingly been targets of professional malpractice. Then followed other litigations crafted after similar litigations involving accountants. This plethora of professional litigations was initiated by A. unhappy clients, B. suffering third parties, C. regulators, and D. insurance guarantee funds. The usual cause of the dispute involved A. reserve errors, B. insurer insolvencies, and C. underfunded pension funds. The root cause of the dispute typically involved A. faulty data, B. unreasonable assumptions, C. flawed methodologies, D. careless computations, and E. professional ignorance. The primary actuarial specialties involved in such litigations were A. life, B. pension, and C. casualty coverages. Healthcare plan legal disputes are virtually non-existent, at least so far. The health actuary, while not typically the target of a professional liability claim, should take heed. The same logic supporting the above-cited litigation may be easily applied to the health actuary. Professional liability. The inherent nature of the actuary's employment essentially determines any professional liability. The consulting actuary, using billable time, has a greater exposure to liability than an A. insurer actuary, B. a government actuary, or a C. teaching actuary. The essence of the professional liability issue is this: whenever a professional is engaged to provide a specialized service, such professional has an obligation to exercise due care and competence. Failure to do so will subject such professional to a liability for negligence. The standards do not demand that the professional be correct, but only that there be A. reasonable skill and competence, and B. good faith, and C. an absence of fraud. Generally accepted actuarial principles. Such principles are published, maintained, and modified by the Academy and serve as guides to the actuary in specified circumstances. Such principles are recognized by the A. regulators and B. courts. The principles are function-specific. It is important to note that absent any clear statement of principle, the actuary is obligated to exercise good judgment to see that sound actuarial principles, as established by precedent or common usage, are followed. Actuaries working in specialized fields have principles to follow that fit that specialized field. Increase in litigation. Introduction. These specific requirements have contributed significantly to the recent increase in actuarial liability litigation. NAIC Actuarial Opinions and ERISA. NAIC Actuarial Opinions. The NAIC began to require an actuarial opinion as part of an insurer's annual statement in 1975. This requirement affected both life and health actuaries. The target, typically, of such litigations has been A. the outside consulting actuary, which has E&O insurance, or deep pockets usually, rather than B. the in-house actuary, who has only a limited amount of assets to be reached. The NAIC began to require an actuarial statement of casualty loss reserves in 1990, largely in response to a surprising number of casualty insurer failures. The inherent difficulty in properly setting casualty reserves, huge variances, long run-out tail, changing benefits, etc., contributed to such increase in litigations. ERISA. ERISA, enacted in 1974, introduced a host of new laws, rules, concepts, etc., each of which exposed the actuary to new or expanded liability challenges. Examples include the law on extinctions, joint board for the enrollment of actuaries, plan qualifications and reporting requirements, professional responsibilities, actuary as fiduciary, prohibited transactions and parties and interest, and enforcement. ERISA sanctions. ERISA was a huge law that overhauled the entire regulatory fabric of both qualified and unqualified benefit plans. Such included stricter duties and responsibilities for all professionals who service such plans. This included actuaries. Actuaries providing services to ERISA-regulated plans are subject to harsh penalties, both civil and criminal, for the violation of such provisions. ERISA also holds the actuaries to higher standards of independence and accountability. Enrolled actuaries. A new professional category, enrolled actuary, was created by ERISA. Also created was a new professional organization known as the Joint Board for the Enrollment of Actuaries. Such board sets the standards and requirements for such enrolled actuaries. The board has the authority to disenroll any actuary who A. fails to discharge such duties under ERISA, or B. fails to satisfy the duties of enrollment. Plan qualification and reporting. The plan administrator, fiduciary under ERISA, must A. implement a sound funding policy, B. properly supervise and manage the plan, C. establish a procedure for amending the plan, and D. establish a claim procedure. The required statement of financial condition must have an actuarial certification. Professional responsibilities. The enrolled actuary has added ERISA-provided responsibilities in having to select actuarial methods and assumptions that are unbiased and independent. A regularly scheduled actuarial report is required. Actuary as a fiduciary. While ERISA does not specifically provide that the enrolled actuary is a fiduciary, facts and circumstances may well indicate otherwise. If the actuary A exercises discretionary authority or management of an ERISA plan, B exercises authority or control over plan assets, C renders investment advice for a fee, or D has any discretionary control in plan administration, such actuary would most likely be deemed to be a plan fiduciary. Prohibited transactions and parties in interest. The actuary, if acting as a plan fiduciary, must commit no fiduciary breaches. Also, the actuary, acting as a party in interest, must not engage in any prohibited transactions. Examples of prohibited transactions include A. selling or leasing property to the plan, B. any lending or borrowing between the plan and a party in interest, C. the providing of any goods or services between the plan and the party in interest, D. the receiving by a party in interest of any plan asset, and E. the acquisition of any plan sponsor, securities, property, etc., unless such is less than 10% of plan assets. Enforcement provision. This section permits a plaintiff, plan participant, plan sponsor, or Department of Labor to directly sue the plan's enrolled actuary for an alleged infraction. The penalties may be civil or criminal. Also, the DOL has significant authority over the plan report of the enrolled actuary. Legal aspects of liability. In general, actuarial liability is a fairly recent tort. It is rooted in standards developed over the years for other professionals, more specifically accountants. The tort involves two separate but interrelated elements: A, who are the claimants, and B, what fault must they prove? Potential claimants include A, clients, and or B, persons who will or might rely on the work product. Fault may be in the range of A, simple errors, to B, recklessness, to C, fraud. Rules governing such tort claims vary from A, state rules, to B, federal rules, that is ERISA, IRC, etc. Clients. The legal concept of privity of contract arises when the actuary agrees to A, provide certain services in exchange for B, a fee, and this legal concept requires the actuary to deliver the promised service with the A, skill and competence, B, reasonably expected of actuaries as described by C, generally accepted actuarial principles, using D, reasonable care, and E, honoring confidentiality practices. Depending on facts and circumstances, the actuary may have a fiduciary relationship with the client. When the actuary fails to act properly, either in A, contract breach, B, fiduciary breach, or C, tort may exist. Typically, contractual breaches are the most favorable to the actuary with respect to the damages that may be awarded. Other practices. While analyzing the obligation of the actuary to a client is relatively simple, such obligation to other involved parties, so-called third parties, becomes more complex. This is because the common law with respect to such obligation varies from state to state. To understand the complexity of the state's common law, the following practices should be considered: A, New York practice, B, foreseeability rule, C, restatement rule, and D, recklessness and fraud. New York practice. Most states follow this practice, whereby the work product is limited to a specific A, use, and B, client. Some modifications of this practice extend the uses to other A, persons, or to B, groups of persons who may foreseeably use the work product. Foreseeability rule. An actuary providing a claim reserve computation with the understanding that the employer was in a buy-sell transaction should have foreseen that the actuary could be sued if the claim reserve were challenged. Restatement rule. The actuary who provides a work product that by its nature may be used by others should foresee that a liability claim may be filed against such actuary should the work product be faulty. The others are any and all users, individually or a group, who may be anticipated reasonably to use such work product. Recklessness and fraud. The courts may lighten up on actuaries as respects third-party negligence suits. Such favorable treatment does not apply when the actuary may have been reckless or fraudulent. The courts extend little or no sympathy where recklessness or fraud is found. Incorrect estimates. In general, to provide an erroneous estimate is not a professional error. To be at fault in the determination thereof is another matter. The Academy pronouncements dealing with generally accepted actuarial principles are the guides used to determine whether proper determinations were made. Such principles include important A, texts, B, articles, and C, practices that are commonly accepted or used by actuaries. Professional errors are of these types: data-related, assumption-related, methodology-related, computation-related, and knowledge-related. Data-related. Data-related errors involve these failures: not reconciling data, using inappropriate data, misunderstanding data, not adjusting for data aberrations. Not reconciling data. The actuary, in accordance with the Academy Statement of Principles number 23, must, when practicable, review the data for as reasonableness and consistency, unquote. Moreover, whenever data is used in the analysis of reserves, they must reconcile to the insurer's financial records. Insurer should include the self-funder or plan sponsor. Examples of not reconciling the data are as follows: lag studies not consistent with paid claims, computing reserve deficiency with data not consistent with insurer's published data. It must be noted that the actuary is obligated to review but not audit the data. Using inappropriate data. The Academy Statement of Principles number 23 requires the actuary to use accurate and appropriate data. This typically translates into using the best but not necessarily perfect data. An example might be a lag triangle that was prepared as a mail date rather than on a book date. Misunderstanding data. Examples of such misunderstanding include the failure to recognize and or properly account for such factors as A. underwriting, B. claims practices, C. benefit structure, D. legal factors, E. electronic transmissions, F. social environment, or G. meanings and definitions, such as IRS forms W-2 and 1099 and sub-S corporations. Not adjusting. Accepting a lag study that had anomalies and not modifying the data, thereby not computing a proper reserve, was an error of not adjusting. Assumption-related. The Academy Statements of Principles number 36 requires that the actuary use reasonable assumptions where such may be A. implicit, B. explicit, or C. involve the estimating or interpreting the future or the past. In some instances, the actuary is obligated to A. explain, B. comment on, or C. consider reasonable alternate assumptions and disclose such to the client. In past instances, reasons for the challenge of the actuary's assumptions included A. conflict with experience, B. patently unreasonable, C. inconsistent with economic or market factors, and D. not consistent with past assumptions. Methodology related. The Academy Statement of Principles number 36 requires that the actuary must use appropriate methodology. The actuary is expected to A. examine options and alternatives, B. not jump to a method without giving it the reasonable thought, and C. document and explain any changes in methodology, and D. always avoid setting the assumptions to produce a desired result. Computation-related. These primarily include A. typos, B. arithmetic, and C. programming errors. These are easy to assert and difficult to defend. If there is an aberrant result, the actuary is obligated to seek and find if such was the result of a computation-related error. Knowledge-related. The actuary is obligated to be current as respects laws, regulations, ruling practices, and court decisions. This obligation is becoming increasingly difficult to meet because of the many fast-changing rules, products, decisions, etc. Actuary and fiduciary duties. In general, two assertions are put forth by the writer. One, depending on facts and circumstances, the actuary may or may not be a fiduciary. The logic expressed in the amicus curiae brief discussed in this section can be relied upon. If the actuary, however, declares that such actuary is a fiduciary with respect to work product and the engager agrees with this declaration, a fiduciary relationship is created and should be honored. Academy Amicus Curiae Briefs. In the litigation United Teacher Associates Insurance Company versus McKean and Bailey, the Academy argued that the actuary, McKean, was not a fiduciary. These opinions of the Academy are well considered and deserve careful study. Actuaries may or may not be fiduciaries. It would be incorrect to necessarily designate an actuary to be a fiduciary because facts and circumstances may indicate otherwise. The actuary is a fiduciary if facts and circumstances so indicate. In one litigation, the actuaries doing ERISA pension work were not held to be actuaries. Simply doing professional work does not make the practitioner a fiduciary. The actuary must have some authority beyond that of a professional function. In one court decision, it was held that a fiduciary duty is an extraordinary one and will not be created lightly. Court's decision was too broad. In one litigation, the court gave the appearance of wanting to brand the actuary a fiduciary in order to affix guilt. The case in dispute needed to be adjudicated on the facts and not on the alleged and presumed role of the actuary. Federal court versus state law. A case was heard in the federal district court in Texas on ground of diversity. As such, it was not correct for the court to interject into state law. Texas state law would not have found the actuary to be a fiduciary. Professional standards and fiduciary breach. The court's presumption was this: since the actuary violated the Academy's code of professional conduct, a fiduciary breach was committed. This presumption is not correct. The actuary is obligated to abide by the code of professional conduct, whether or not there is a fiduciary relationship. Professional standards arise from Academy's actions and have no relationship to fiduciary issues. Avoiding litigations. In general, the prudent actuary may dramatically reduce the risk of being sued by following good practices in these areas: A. Engagement agreements, B. Work product design, C. Work papers, and D. Peer review. Engagement agreements. Such letters or agreements generally have the purpose of A. limiting the possibilities of third-party negligence, B. limiting or defining the amount of potential damages, C. carefully defining the scope, purpose, and parties to the work product, and D. limiting the use and distribution of the work product. It is the belief of many actuaries that such language is unproductive and reflects unfavorable on their endeavors. Certainly, such documents, however well drafted, have no applicability where recklessness or fraud are involved. Report format or work product. Much can and should be done to structure the report format so as to minimize the risk of a professional liability complaint. To this end, helpful language in the work product should incorporate all of the requirements set forth in the Academy's Statement of Actuarial Practices, with special emphasis to such items as these: A. Parties to the work product and the use of the work product, B. uncertain or predictive nature of the work product, C. assumptions being carefully set forth, D. data and documentation used, and E. any inherent problems with the risk. Where there are doubts or reservations by the actuary, a qualified opinion should be provided. Work papers. Well-documented and well-organized work papers are essential. These work papers should be A. complete, B. indexed, C. purged of needless items, and D. well-organized. Ideally, the work papers should clearly show that these factors were contemplated: A. nature of risks, B. data issues, C. methods used, D. assumptions considered and used, and E. reasonableness of the results. Peer review. While not commonly used, these can be most useful and constructive. Telephone notes, emails, etc. should be kept of such reviews and should be retained on the work papers. Overview of litigations. These were the reasons for most of the professional liability litigations involving the actuary. 1. Pension plan assumptions and methodologies. 2. Reserve computations where there was a buy-sell agreement. And 3. Claim reserves with difficult large or new casualty perils. Amicus Curiae Briefs. Introduction. The Academy has submitted the following Amicus Curiae Briefs where professional liability issues were in contest. Shepley v. New Coleman Holdings, Shea v. Newman Howard, Lockheed v. Spink, Cohen v. Briscoe, Willens v. Northwestern Mutual, and Municipal Employees v. Gabriel Roeder and Smith. Shepley v. New Coleman Holdings. In a case involving a defined benefit pension plan, the Academy asserted, contrary to the court's findings, the following. The lower court was in error in opining that the actuary was negligent when the actuary correctly followed the generally accepted actuarial principles practices promulgated by the Academy. 2. The lower court was in error in its unrealistic assessment of the ease by which future investment earnings may be predicted. Shea v. Newman Howard. This litigation involved an ERISA plan and whether or not the fiduciary thereof has the right and authority to rely on the opinion of the enrolled actuary. The essence of the opinion of the Academy was as follows. 1. The lower court was in error in opining that an ERISA fiduciary had the obligations to question or to not accept the expert advice of the enrolled actuary who offered such fiduciary professional advice in good faith. 2. The lower court was in error in rejecting the advice of an expert witness who was trained and knowledgeable with respect to the facts of the case. Lockheed v. Spink. The Academy in this case encouraged the Supreme Court to clarify the actions of the ERISA plan sponsor, the plan document, and the specific party and interest transaction. The lower court had left dangling an important legal precedent set in the Mertens v. Hewitt decision. Cohen v. Briscoe. In a case involving the professional work done by a consulting actuarial firm to a failed insurer where the reserves were incorrectly computed, an amicus curiae brief made these assertions. The evaluation actuaries function as a team of professionals advising the management of the insurer. 2. The opinion offered by the consulting actuaries was not a guarantee of the insurer's solvency. 3. The obligation of the consulting actuaries was to edit, but not audit, the data of the insurer. 4. Professional standards are not binding until they are formally adopted. Willens v. Northwestern Mutual. In a case involving the meaning of the Academy's actuarial statement of principles, the Academy, in its amicus curiae brief, asserted the following. The actuarial statement of practices was an appropriate source of guide for the actuary, and 2, the development of such guides were objective in nature. Municipal Employees v. Gabriel Roeder v. Smith. In a case involving a pension valuation, the amicus curiae brief argued that an actuary is clearly a professional and should be treated accordingly. Please see the printed form of this book for a list of all the relevant court cases. This concludes Chapter 3.